See what kind of mood I'm in, Scrape?
You're in a great mood. Which
I want
is,
everybody to see this shirt.
Just very welcome to me.
Can people see it?
Yeah.
There it is.
I don't know who made it. It was in the studio. I'm assuming it was sent to the morning show, but it says, "Where Sammy goes, champagne flows."
Sam Levitt, back with a playoff-bound team. Well, maybe.
Crazy.
It's sure looking like it all of a sudden, isn't it? Crazy.
They are the talk of baseball right now because they were dead in the water 3 weeks ago.
Let's put it into perspective. But first, we'll welcome you in. Chrisello, that is Scraby over there. And we are in the Bill House Studios. It's a three-hour get-together today on Gwynn and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr. has the day off, as do the Padres, for the first time in 2.5 weeks. They've had a game for 16 straight days. I know they're in a stretch of something like 26 games in 27 days. And while we were all celebrating a huge victory yesterday over the Brewers to complete the three-game sweep and move into, you know, sole possession of second place in the wild card and all that went with that, yeah, while we were doing all that, the Padres were in the clubhouse going, "Oh, thank God we got a day off tomorrow."
Yeah.
They're just so excited to have a day off. They haven't had one in ages. And today they get one as they'll be resting. And if you're going to get a day off, hey, sign me up for Cleveland.
You know, you can go to the Rock and Roll Museum.
You can go to the Rock and Roll Museum, yeah. They don't care where they're getting the day off. They're happy to get one. They will be back in action, of course, starting a series with the Guards tomorrow. But all is wonderful in Padre land. And just to add to that, by the way, earlier today, one of the day games, the Pirates crushed the Marlins today, 13-1. I noticed that. So that drops the Marlins another half game back in the race for those final two play. Yeah, I take it all. Later, I think the Phillies play today in the Field of Dreams game.
Oh, it's on Netflix, too.
Oh, goodness.
We're going to have to fire up Netflix.
Does that mean we don't have to watch it?
No, we're going to have to fire up Netflix. I am a sucker for these games.
Why do you like this? It was good.
I don't know.
The first game was ridiculous when Kevin Costner came out of the cornfield and introduced the players who then also came out of the cornfield. They themselves had to feel ridiculous.
I bet they did. And we roasted that for when that happened. When Kevin Costner came walking out of the cornfield. But I am a sucker for these games.
You like the Field of Dreams
fun.
Game.
Okay. I like, you know, maybe here's why it is. Because my dad's parents lived in Iowa, and that's where this game is.
Oh, okay, a little Iowa connection there.
And we went to this house one time to see the field and everything.
All right, so a little connection. I got that. Field of Dreams Day, a game is later. The Phillies are in that. So we'll become Twins fans later on this afternoon. But, yes, as it stands, the Padres are in the number two spot. And they are a game ahead of both the Phillies and the Diamondbacks. Arizona is idle tonight. And as I just said, the Marlins have already lost. So now let's go back to what you began with, which is the Padres are the talk of baseball, and nobody can believe what has happened. So let's put it into perspective. 33 days ago, Scraby, that is on July 10th, the Padres were 6.5 back of the final wild card spot, and they were in eighth place in the wild card standings. In those 33 days, they've not only moved into a wild card spot by a game, they have passed the Nationals, they have passed the Marlins, they have passed the Phillies, the Pirates, the Cardinals, and the Diamondbacks. They have passed, count them, six teams in 33 days. This is why people are like, whoa. And we are too, because we didn't expect it.
No. Nope.
We had pretty much given up the ship.
He said ship.
I did. Although we felt the other, too.
We did. We also said that word.
Well, let's be honest. The team was playing like ship at the time. So,
oh, man, you're sneaking me.
So, you know, you can understand why we're a little hesitant to believe in things, but... you know, I credit Craig Stammen. I've said it before, you know, with continuing to try stuff, even when nothing was working, you know, and then they landed on the pitching chaos. And I think that for some reason, seemed to kind of jumpstart it. Obviously, the hitting of Jackson Merrill and Fernando is more of a reason why.
Yeah.
But you know, all of a sudden, the starters piggybacking there, you know, kept them in games long enough, and the offense came to life. And, you know, once that happens, your bullpen hasn't gone anywhere. Yeah. The only thing that happened to the bullpen is that it got exhausted there. But now you've added Robbie Ray, you've added Casey Mize. And even though your first thought is, well, neither guy's really been that great yet, Casey Mize pitched better in his second game. Robbie Ray only four innings yesterday. But understand that with these two guys there, and you now have the solidified five-man rotation where pretty much every starter is going to give you five or six innings. If that continues, win or lose, the bullpen is going to stay rested and be able to dominate the way it did yesterday. And that's what won the game yesterday. The bullpen was incredible, capped off by Adrian Mordejon's best performance, maybe of his career. I don't know. That might be overstating it. But my goodness, he gives up another run there. The Brewers are winning that game, and Adrian Mordejon refused to buckle in. He just said, "Look, I gotta, you know, nothing's going good here in this 11th inning. I gotta find a way to not let them score again." And he did, and it ended up paying off in one of the great victories of the season. And what I said yesterday was the best game of the season. And I will go through, it was such a good game that after the game, Scrape, you and I did not do our normal segment of notes on a scorecard because there's so much good stuff from that game yesterday that the hour-long show we had last night may not have been able to contain it.
Well, when you lifted up the papers, I was surprised that your arm could actually do that.
Because I needed a forklift to pick up all the papers and on a scorecard.
You usually have four
or five pages.
There's at least 15.
12, actually, 12. Is the actual number of notes on a scorecard pages. But there's so much stuff, so much strategy, so many things happened that didn't happen, plays that were made, plays that weren't made, substitution, changes, coaching decisions, that I love. And to say that that had the feel of a playoff game is not hyperbole. It had the feel of a playoff game. It took a playoff-like amount of time to play it. Three hours and 46 minutes. And guess what? I was in no hurry for it to end. That's when baseball is at its best. And I thought yesterday, and if they had lost the game, I would have said something similar. Although, you know, obviously wouldn't have been as fun of a final result, but that didn't change. It was just a really fun game. We're going to break it all down from the great things that happened to stuff like Xander not being asked to bunt in the 10th inning, which kept me awake for most of the night last night. So we'll get into all of that. Notes on a scorecard a little later. I want to give a quick heads up. If you are driving north on the 5 freeway, there's not a SIG alert. There's no road closures.
Okay, good.
All right.
What news are you breaking
right
now?
I'm breaking something pretty important. I want everybody on the 5 freeway north, look over your shoulder. I mean, not figuratively, but, you know, keep an eye out for a little white fast racing car with the license plate Super Nut. He may be zigging in and out of traffic, hopefully not breaking the speed limit, but Braden, who just finished the show, is coaching his team at Cathedral in a game at Modern Day at, I think, 4:30 today.
Wait,
now, I don't
modern
know.
Day in,
modern
in
Day's
LA?
In Santa Ana.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So I don't know how anyone's going to get there in 2.5 hours under these conditions. You know what the traffic's going to have to be like. So everybody be on the watchful eye. And if you can move out of his way, let him pass.
No.
He has somewhere to go.
No.
You don't want to do them a favor?
I'm trying
to help him out.
We're against speeders.
I don't want him to speed. I want the people to get out of his way so he doesn't have to speed. He can just ease his way up to the game.
So wait, people are supposed to part the road as he goes 65 down the freeway?
I want to see a parting of the 5 freeway up in Oceanside.
While he just cruise control 65.
While he just
kind of
eases his way like this, Gravy, with the arm over the, you know. Yeah. So, Braden, look out for Braden.
He should have borrowed Tony's helicopter.
Yeah, right. Tony's probably using it today because I believe his daughter, Tony's daughter, is having her first soccer match today for Grand Canyon. In fact, we should check see if there's a score available on that or what time that game is. But Tony Gwynn's daughter, Michaela, is down in Phoenix. She's got her very first collegiate Division I game today.
Oh, Braden just texted me.
That's where Tony is. What Braden said? Does he appreciate my help?
No. All he said was ETA says 3:46. Plenty of time.
3:46.
So he must be going 100.
No kidding. I've driven the 5. And you get to Carlsbad and Oceanside, it could be an hour and a half just getting through those spots. So I wish you all the best, Braden Surprenant. But everybody, wish him the best. He is the hardest working guy. We're not. He is.
Wait, speak for yourself.
Yeah, you don't do much.
I have another job too.
Oh, but you're not driving to modern day right now. That is an assignment.
I am definitely not, nor would I want to.
That is an assignment. All right, we have 3 hours today. And a couple of quick notes. Brian Dunseth of MLS on Apple TV, our regular Thursday interview, talking MLS, talking soccer, talking everything for all you SDFC fans. We'll get the latest from him. Always fun talking with those guys. And then at 3:30 today, we have a special edition of Notes on a Scorecard. We are going to look back at really one of the best baseball games of the year. And if you haven't heard Notes on a Scorecard yet, I hope you feel like you're in for a treat, because the folks that tune in on the afternoon days after love, for some reason, Notes on a Scorecard become kind of a thing.
More so it's you're angry after games. So because
they've
lost.
Even though they won yesterday, there's going to be things to be angry about into Notes on a Scorecard today. That's coming up. Obviously, the regular stuff, Gambit, Chris versus the Fans, Big 5. It all leads to a replay of today's Padre Roundtable, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. Brian Lawrence, former Padres pitcher, was our guest. He was great. We'll talk about that and everything else that's happening on 97.3 The Fan.
For the most in-depth Padres conversations anywhere in San Diego, check out 94.
All right, we are here. It is Gwynn and Chris, San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan. We got Grand Canyon, the Lopes, taking on Buffalo.
Buffalo, huh?
Not the Josh Allen-led Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
The school that I believe it was Khalil Mack played Buffalo.
He did. There was a guy also on the Chargers, when I worked for Chargers Radio, named Brandon Oliver.
Another bout of Buffalo. Yes. So it'll be Grand Canyon against the Buffalo Bulls. That's their nickname. Game gets underway at 7 o'clock. Wait a minute now. Hold on. I'm off on this. That's a week from today. I don't want to give everybody the wrong impression here. I thought Tony said the opening game was today. Did he not?
I'm not sure.
Well, because there's a story.
Because he was off yesterday, too. So
he was off
from the broadcast as well.
Okay, well, because it says here Grand Canyon defeated Arizona 2-0 yesterday. So I wonder if that was the opening game yesterday.
This is a dumb question, but do you think there's two teams?
No.
Okay.
No, they are officially 1-0. They did play yesterday, so I was wrong. 2-0.
I guess I was wrong, too.
Tony Gwynn Jr.'s daughter, Michaela. Her team posts a victory. I'm looking at the scoring. She was not either of the two goal scorers. Doesn't mean she didn't have a big hand in the win. Congratulations to Tony and his daughter.
I mean, Arizona, that's a big
school. They did win. Arizona, that is a big school. It's, Big 12. Anyway, all right. Enough of that. Braden Surprenant ran into his first traffic jam, he said. Car slowed down up in Loma Santa Fe, so he's in trouble.
Wait, he text you that?
No, I'm just making it up.
He said he texted me and said that he did think that you were. He does appreciate you for.
I'm trying to help him get there, man. That's a long drive under tough circumstances. Earlier today, we had a really good roundtable, Padre roundtable, hosted by Ben Higgins and including myself and Braden and Stephen Woods and. We've had a lot of special guests this year. It's been a lot of fun, you know, having people from the media come in, TV personalities. Ted Leitner came in and, you know, some of the other great radio voices here in town.
I was here when I've only done one. The first one, Darnay Tripp was with
Darnay
us.
Was the guy from what's the NBC?
NBC, yes.
Yeah, so we've had a bunch of guys and some former Padres. And today we had Brian Lawrence, right-hander, who was the opening day starter for the Padres. You good Padre fans will certainly remember Brian. He was the opening day starter in back-to-back years, 2003 and 2004. He was also part of the 2005 division-winning team. He pitched in two games in that postseason that year, both out of the bullpen. But Brian Lawrence had a really, you know, solid run here. He won 15 games for the Padres in 2004. And along with Jake Peavy, gave them a pretty good 1-2 punch at the top of the rotation. And it also, his name came up last year, when Mason Miller threw an immaculate inning because he became the second Padre ever to do it, the first having been Brian Lawrence.
Wow.
So
that's a good list.
Not bad. Yeah, it's B-Law and it's Mason Miller. But Brian was on today, and you know, I thought one of the things – I enjoy the whole roundtable because there's a lot of good stuff, and obviously the Padres are winning, and there's a lot of good stuff. But one thing, you know, Ben brought up near the end was the schedule. And you and I talked about this 2 days ago. The Padres only have four series left against playoff-level, you know, teams.
Yes.
I think they have the Dodgers, they have Arizona, and they have, I think it's the Yankees, the Rays. Those are the four series left that the Padres have against teams that would be in the playoffs. Arizona has eight such series left. So you'd have to say advantage Padres there. But Brian Lawrence cautioned today with a little story about something that happened to he and Jake Peavy way back when about overlooking opponents. Can't do it.
Well, I've always said there's no bad team in the big leagues. They're all major league teams. I remember I was on a flight coming from somewhere. Me and Jake sat next to each other, and we were absolutely dominating teams. Like, we were just pitching. We were going into Kansas City, and they were not good. And we're like, you know, how we got, you know, another one here. And I think we both gave up five runs in the first inning. And so it's like there's no bad teams. They all can get you at any day. And so you continue. You got to play baseball the way they're playing right now and just put your head down and play the game correctly no matter who they're playing. And then they know that. It's going out there and getting it done and just continue to play the way they're playing right now.
Brian Lawrence, some of what he had to say today, shared some really good stories and some really good insights. So I recommend listening to the roundtable. That'll play in its entirety at 5 o'clock today. But, it's just interesting to get an example of it. Like, he and Jake Peavy were sitting on a plane going, huh, we going to Kansas City? This is going to be a lock city the way we're
dominating
pitching.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Bad teams make me nervous when the Padres play them, just because it feels like they always play down to the level. So,
but not this year.
Not this year. But
this year they've been really good.
Some pitchers lock them down that are
couple.
Yeah.
But
and
overall,
that's going to happen throughout the course of a 162-game season.
I mean, it seems like, at least for now, we've kind of got rid of the agony of playing the Rockies.
That is true.
I will take that. But, yeah, I think the Padres have done a pretty good job. And let's be honest, because they only have four series left against the teams I just named, but Cleveland is still in the hunt, so they're playing them. You know what I mean? They're still playing teams that are there. They're not just playing a bunch of teams that are out of it entirely. So it's going to be 40 games, which, when you think about it, is still 1/4 of the season to go.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And the question is, which Padres will we see in these 40 games? Will we see the one that started the season 29-18? Or will we see the one that gave us 2 months of ship by going 21-35.
You keep saying that.
I know, I'll stop it. Or will we see this latest rendition of the Padres, which is beating everybody 15-4? And not only 15-4, on July 18th, that again is less than a month ago.
Yes.
The Padres were clearly, without question, the worst hitting team in baseball. They were last in runs. They were last in average. They were last in slugging. They were last in OPS. Everything. There was nobody that could contend with them. And what in the world has happened? Because since July 19th to now, they are number one in all of the categories I just named. They didn't just go from dead last to like the middle of the pack. They've gone from the absolute worst and over the last 3.5 weeks, the absolute best. It is really kind of defies explanation.
It does. So. It does. And this team has had so many different versions. You know what I was thinking about? Like, they should break up the major league season into four parts and then give some team who wins those four parts a prize, because it is a battle all year long. You could be a bad team for 40 games. You could be this team.
Baseball, the Padres are bad for 60 games this year.
Baseball boggles my mind.
John Smoltz, Hall of Famer, it's funny you mentioned this. He was asked about how to solve the discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots. Right? That's the big argument in baseball.
It is.
Nobody has an answer to it. You know, salary cap? Well, okay, but the players aren't going to do it. So how are we going to actually do this? John Smoltz said that he believes, and others, you know, in his kind of circle,
his ilk,
yeah, they agree and think that it is time for baseball to split the season in two and have two basically 80-game seasons. And he, if you want to listen to it, you could call him up on YouTube talking about this.
I will go do this
But
later.
He does a very in-depth explanation as to why that will keep the have-nots from trading all their players, because they'll have you have a second half of a season. He had a lot of explanations as to why this would help work. And we need something along with the salary cap that you know they're not going to go for.
Yeah.
So John Smoltz, it's just funny that you said they should split the season up.
I didn't hear this at all.
He thinks that is legit the way, or not. Look, nothing's going to solve it entirely.
Yeah.
But he thinks that can be a big step toward doing something like that. If you want to hear it, find John Smoltz on YouTube, or Scraby, you can put a link somewhere.
Yeah, I'll definitely go look.
You'll
for
find
this.
It. John Smoltz is a pretty smart guy. Even if you don't like him on the broadcast, which I do.
I think
he's
too.
A really good broadcaster, too. But he's thought this through, and I didn't say everything he said. He had a lot of support for this idea. So if you're interested, you can check that out. All right, we'll do a little soccer for all of you fans of football. Oh, my God, Scraby. Speaking of football, today's August 13th. September 13th is the Sunday for week one.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, most preseason games start today.
Yeah, true. But, yeah, there are some preseason. But, no, we're 1 month from the first Sunday. We're 1 month from Scott Hansen saying, and now, with tons of commercial interruption, here is NFL Red Zone.
I was going to say, you have to be truthful.
Yes, he used to say that there was no interruption. Now there's going to be interruption.
Something just tells me last year when he lied to the audience, it actually did hurt Scott Hansen.
Well, like, he tried to come as clean as he could. He's such
a
good stand-up guy.
Too many times.
Well, he's a stand-up guy, and he made a mistake. That'll happen. We all do.
Get ready for more ads, as Chris says, though.
Yeah, they're going to be ads, but I'll still be watching the Red Zone 1 month from today. We'll have more Gwynn and Chris in a moment. Gwynn and Chris continues. 2:35. Happy Thursday to you. It always takes me a minute to remember what day it is.
I've been having trouble this week.
I always go, well, Thursday, yeah. And even when I say it, I'm not always right. I miss it sometimes.
Just notate, I did the roundtable today, it's Thursday.
Yeah. All I know is that a month from today, it's week one of the NFL. That's all I have a tunnel vision. I can't believe it's so close.
I wonder if our commissioner has set up a draft yet.
Don't get me started. Number one, number
I did
two.
That on purpose.
Don't make me say something because he doesn't like when I bug him.
It's not him. He actually said last time he didn't mind it.
He doesn't want to be bugged. But I did talk to John Flint today over there at KSON, and he asked, he goes, are we having a season? I said, you know the routine by now.
Yeah.
You know, of course we're having
this is
a season.
Like the 6 year.
Yeah, we've been doing this for 8 years. Tony will, have it ready, and you just wait. You'll get your notice.
The most stressful part of the year is fantasy football draft season because no one can ever figure out a date to do it.
That coming up with it, but it's much easier now because everybody just sits at somewhere on their phone and does the draft.
Yeah, when you're in person, it's way harder.
Honestly, Scraby, back in the day, we had 12 people coming from halfway all over the country to San Diego to meet somewhere to have the draft in person because you couldn't do it any other way.
Those are the days.
Those was much more difficult to put it together.
You know, you get to go up there. I even did one time where you go up there and you get to write on the board.
Wrote
your
own name. Yep. Yeah. We used to have 12 pieces of that huge butcher paper, that white stuff, and hang it along the walls. And when you drafted Jerry Rice or whatever, you walked up and wrote it in. A little different.
Rod said, we draft live at a bar, and I've done that before when I was a drinker. Worst team of my life.
Didn't go too well for you that year.
I thought it was so good, though, leaving that bar. Yeah. I would not recommend drafting drunk.
Well, I didn't say, we can draft in a bar and not be drunk. I know that's news to you, Scraby. Not every person at a bar is drunk.
That is true.
Okay. Let's be clear about that.
All right, I'm going to call
Brian Dunseth, MLS on Apple TV. Going to be joining us here momentarily. Don't forget, special rendition in the 3 o'clock hour today. Notes on a scorecard from yesterday's, what I deemed, the best game of the season. Padres 4-3 victory over the Milwaukee Brewers. By the way, the Brewers, no time to rest. They're up in L.A. tonight taking on the Dodgers. So Padres get their first day off in 2.5 weeks, and I'm sure they are enjoying that. Tomorrow, Friar Friday, although a very quick show.
Yeah, only
don't
an hour.
Blink, you might miss it. But one thing that you will get tomorrow between 2 and 3 is our Friar Friday interview with Luis Renjifo, who has been one of the amazing stars of what's happened here in the last 3.5 weeks. And he'll be our guest. We'll have a chance to meet him tomorrow on Friar Friday. But looking forward to talking a little soccer. Each and every week when we do our soccer visits, they're always fun. And Brian Dunseth joins us from Apple TV. Brian, how are you today, sir? Good to talk to you, as always.
Same. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Well, we're hanging in there, but we're trying to figure out where we are in the season. we are still new to all of this, Brian, even though it's our second year. You know, we had MLS, and then we had some tournament. I think it was the CONCACAF. Then we had MLS, and then we had the World Cup. Then we had some MLS. Now we have Leagues Cup. And I think now we're going back to MLS. So it makes some sense of it to all of us that are not as familiar.
Yeah, welcome. You're getting indoctrinated in real time and in world football.
Right.
Yeah, I know it can be confusing because every time I turn on another sport, I'm like, wait a second, is that a tournament in the middle of the season?
The NBA play. I get it.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm like, oh, it's a different court. That must mean, what do I know? Knucklehead. where to start? I think, let's go back in 2025. I think what we've seen from San Diego ownership, from leadership behind the scenes to Mikey, his coaching staff, and the players in particular, that as important the play on the field is the philosophical approach and creating kind of an internal morality and balance and check systems that, the performance on the field is as important as the human being and the collective inside of that locker room. And whatever the culture that was set from day one, it was really evident that there was a couple of non-negotiables. And first and foremost, I think, Mikey and obviously we can reference the Chucky Lozano situation is that there's certain things that are moments in time where you got to make tough decisions and you've got to figure out ways to allow an individual to be an individual, but also allow the collective to continue to grow in the same direction. And so for as hard as it was to kind of watch from the outside looking in, what could have been a very destructive moment in the quote unquote off season heading into the preseason that there was a very clear idea of what San Diego wanted to do. And listen, while you know, the performances last year were at such an extremely high, consistent level,
yeah,
that there was bound to be a drop-off. But I don't think anyone projected the drop-off to be as significant as it was in the first phase of the season, meaning that last 10 to 15 minutes where significant points were dropped. And Mike,
right,
talked about
that was
it.
The big thing, yeah, man. It seemed like every game something, you know, lurking was waiting, evil lurking was waiting, you know, in the last 15 minutes.
And as much as that is tactical and it's physical, you know, the dumbest theory is sometimes the easiest, and it's just mental. And you fall asleep at the wrong second. And as we know, whether we call it, you know, the psychology, we call it the yips, we talk about, you know, the functional breakdown of just mistakes in moments where you don't feel like, you know, you're getting the rub of the green, that the results are going your way, that you start to kind of get this feeling of, here we go again. I've been on teams like that. I've looked over my shoulders and been like, can't trust you, can't trust you, can't trust you. And I can remember one time, the legend Eddie Pope, EP22, U.S. Men's National Team, you know, every game we go into at Real Salt Lake back in the day in the first year, we'd be like, hey, let's just handle our business together, and then we can take on the rest of it. So, you know, all these things can be true. But what I would say is that sometimes when you struggle, you end up learning a lot more about yourself. Because when everything's going well, it's really easy to paper over the cracks. And you don't need to make things maybe as big of a deal as it needs to be. And I think this year, the evolution of this roster, some of the transfer window movement that we're seeing, the continued evolution from the training facility to the youth team, the academy setup, and what the partnerships around the world look like, there's a really great blueprint that's been set for San Diego. And hopefully, you know, they get back to their winning ways. It's going to be a hell of a challenge, but something that they did last August up at BMO Stadium when they won 2-1 against LAFC.
Got Brian Dunseth from MLS on Apple TV. I'm looking at what happened in the League's Cup, Brian, and the good news for San Diego, they won their last two and ended up going 2-1 in the in phase one, but that 2-1 record was not enough to get them to the knockout stage, so now they can come back and start focusing on their next match, which is LAFC. Having said that, winning those last two matches, even though it doesn't get them to the knockout stage, could that be a nice little something to get them going with some momentum, going back to
MLS? I would add that loss against Club America down in Mexico City, where the World Cup kicked off. Again, I think it's such a young organization. I don't like the word franchise. I don't like the word expansion team. I'll just call it as a group. I think there's moments where, you know, we've seen them go down to Mexico, and whether that was at Toluca or at Universitario against Pumas, that I think they've already had three, maybe four games down in Mexico. And it's funny, I was talking to my partner, Max Bredos, about this. There's only a couple teams in this league that allow you to kind of look in the mirror and really think and realize where you're truly at. Because, you know, throughout the course of the season, you're going to win some games, you're going to lose some games. But I think Inter Miami and LAFC are kind of two teams when you stack up against them. It gives you an opportunity to kind of see how good you are and maybe how far off you really, truly are. And I think the same could be said of going down to Mexico and getting these opportunities because, you know, for the lesser experienced, quote unquote, younger guys, it's always a real lesson when you go down to Mexico. I can tell you when you're breathing out places you never thought you were capable of breathing because you're at altitude, humidity, smog, all those things, chasing, you're suffering. There's a learning process that happens really, really quick. And I think through all these, and you're right, you know, the win against Tijuana, the win last night against Puebla, there were some good things and there were some bad things. But I don't think it's lost on Mikey and this coaching staff that momentum and confidence are two really, really important things, especially with how frustrating this Western Conference can be at times.
Talking to Brian Dunseth here, MLS on Apple TV, on the SDCCU fan hotline. It's not big bank banking. It's better. And I was impressed once they started playing last year with the physicality of soccer. And then the World Cup, you know, was very physical. The MLS gives out a lot of yellow cards. So I was just wondering, it was the physicality of MLS like... do from league to league, are they all the same, or are there different levels of that physicality, if I'm going to use that word for the third time?
Yeah, no, I think you're right, but I do think there's different versions of the game, and I think that's one of the biggest beauties about Major League Soccer, because you'll get guys from Africa, you'll get guys from South America, you'll get guys from Europe, you'll get guys from, the college game, the homegrown process, and they all come with a different version of the background, and it could be, everything that we talk about in the United States, the heat and humidity in the South, the altitude of Salt Lake or Denver, playing on the artificial surface, playing in grass over your ankles at times in other countries, playing on, we call it bumpy pitches, really dirt fields. When you walk, I can tell you, you'll have a different feeling when you walk out of a locker room, say in Honduras at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and there's guys with Uzis surrounding the track.
Mm. And yeah, that would get your attention. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like,
done, Seth. You going to score a goal today? Probably not, sir. Probably not.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell you from being at the Olympics in 2000, we were going in the bronze medal match, and the Chilean fans were outside of our hotel lighting off fireworks and singing all night long. So I like to refer to it lovingly as the dark arts, the manipulation of the game.
And I
think it's also kind of the cultural standpoint. We can go deep into all this, but yeah, I mean, there's different, this version of refereeing, the refereeing that we saw at the World Cup is just a little bit different than the refereeing we see in the Premier League, different than we see in the Champions League, different than we see in Major League Soccer. The idea of what is or isn't a handball that leads to a penalty is drastically different on Saturdays and Sundays versus, the Tuesdays and Wednesdays of Champions League. Yeah, one size doesn't fit all, but you're right. I do think there's something to be said about out hustling, out smarting, out working, and out tackling your opponent. Those, for me, are four non-negotiables that usually give you a huge benefit over the course of 90 minutes.
It was interesting to watch a team such as Argentina, which by the end of that World Cup was kind of looked upon as kind of the dirty, little sneaky bad guys. Yeah, but I didn't hate their style. They played aggressive, and you had to play through that.
You mean they're standing around the field for all of the final? Is that their style you're talking about, Chris?
Well, they got beat pretty bad. There's no question about that.
Well, they also went to overtime on three occasions, and you could do a really fascinating deep dive on the teams that played outdoors as opposed to played in the 72-degree indoor facilities, the teams that travels. There's so many. I can't wait for someone to do a real deep dive. But you're right. I mean, you look at those final 15 minutes against England, and the physicality was certainly beneficial for Argentina. And if you were just going based on the final, if you wanted just the quality of play, England versus Spain probably would have been more of a 50-50 battle, whereas Argentina, and I can't wait to see if there's any stories that come out later, but it seemed as if the tactical setup was wrong from the beginning, and the emotions were high before they even came out on the locker room. But yeah, credit to Spain, because that opening 15 minutes, as you're watching it, you're like, oh God, Argentina is just going to chase, and they are going to suffer, and this is going to be really painful for them to watch.
The only guy that was happier with Argentina's lousy coaching in the finals was the England coach, so that people stopped criticizing him, what a bad job he did. Brian, yeah. Let's finish up with our team here, SDFC. I think people would be surprised, who don't follow it as closely as, some others. There are still 16 matches left in the season. Mm. So there is a ton of time. It's not like, and they're only, now they're in 13th place. So you look at the table and you go, wow, they're way down there. But there's only like 3 points to jump up to eighth or ninth, which is one win. So, what do you think? I mean, should we hope to expect? And I also, real quick before you can go, can you touch on the Galaxy coming here on the 29th with Irving Lozano potentially playing against us here?
Yeah, I would say here's the thing about the Western Conference. You put together two or three wins in a row, and your positioning drastically changes. And to your point,
yeah,
San Diego on 21 points. I believe Dallas and Salt Lake are both on 27, and they're in fifth and sixth position, if my memory serves me correctly.
Right.
But then again, I went to Cal State Fullerton. I never declared a major.
We
so
respect
I'm
the
unreliable.
Titans around here, Brian.
Tuffy the Titan, baby. Tuffy the Titan.
Yeah.
No, listen, I think what you're looking at is an upcoming schedule that becomes, you know, really beneficial in a lot of ways and at the same time very challenging. And I think to your point, the idea of momentum, it's a fickle conversation. But away against LAC, away against Portland on the artificial surface, then you're home against Colorado, and then I'll tie into Chucky. I have been traded at times where I wanted to be traded when I was a player, and I got traded at times where it was a complete shock to the system and a slap in the face. What I've been impressed with is for San Diego, whether it's Tyler Heaps or it's Mikey Veris or anybody associated with leadership, it was very clear that while this seems a very personal issue between Chucky and Mikey and everything that transpired down in Houston, the reality is that a player under contract is still due the money that he's under contract for. And the coach and the manager, or excuse me, the manager, the coaching staff and the ownership and leadership, they need to figure out solutions. They've seemingly figured out the short-term solution, which hopefully becomes a long-term solution for both parties. Chucky's an insanely talented player. We know that. And for whatever happened, you know, that story will probably tell itself at some point. But in the meantime, I'm happy for the player that after missing out on an opportunity to go to a World Cup, he gets a chance to be back on the field and competing at the highest level. And it is certainly one less distraction that Mikey and his coaching staff have to deal with, whether in real time or post 90 minutes going into the press conferences and having to deal with, hey, you know, you guys need goals. Why isn't Chucky here? Why isn't Chucky a part of this? What's happening? You know, and that became incredibly uncomfortable. But from a player standpoint, oh man, it's not nerves. It's anger, it's anticipation, and it is a functionality of going out and trying to embarrass the person that you feel has done you dirty. If you're a San Diego fan, you're going to be super interested to see how that performance, not for the Galaxy per se, and I know you're still battling from Southern California. I'm from the 909. I'm from Upland. I get the battles between San Diego sports and LA sports. But this is going to be really fascinating because it is that personal. So within the dynamics of the game itself and the individual, I'm fascinated to see the emotions that come along with that.
Yeah, definitely circle the 29th, August 29th on the calendar. And I know SDFC fans have, and I'm sure the Galaxy will be here, and so will MLS on Apple TV. Brian Dunseth, thanks so much as always. Look forward to catching up with you soon.
I appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
Very good. Brian Dunseth, they're all so good on MLS. We appreciate them. And I become so much better on soccer just talking to these guys, Scraby. I give them all the credit. But I'm looking at the standings, or the table, as it were.
The table, yes.
And it is true that SDFC is in 13th place.
Not great.
However, if you believe at all in the goal differential statistic.
Oh, I do. You know I do.
Well, a lot of people do because they think it kind of it gives an idea of, you know, the way games go. SDSC is a +3 in goal differential. That is better than any of the six teams above them in the standings.
Wow.
So their goal differential suggests that maybe it's time to start winning some of these close games and move on up. I'll give you a comparison. Last place, Sporting Kansas City, they're a -28. So there's a difference.
There's definitely a difference.
Sure. So I still have hope that SDFC can battle back.
One thing I do know is that the MLS season is very long.
Can you believe there's 16 matches left?
I can't.
I thought there'd be like three or four and then it's all over.
They play longer than the baseball season.
Well, the first MLS match this year, MLS match, because they've had so many games in and out of all these other, you know, tournaments. Saturday, February 21st. That was the first match this year.
Well before. That's like when pitchers and catchers are reporting.
The last match is scheduled for Saturday, November 7th.
That's crazy.
February to November.
That is a long season. And then they're back at it in like December.
2 hours left in this show, which is not nearly that long. Gwen and Chris continues.